Hello. Welcome to this weird and wonderful world that we are creating. We're back again. Feeling a bit more relaxed each time we do it.
Getting more and more comfortable in it.
And definitely enjoying it.
Yeah.
Definitely enjoying it. Hopefully helping some people. I think that's the feedback we've had so far.
Yeah, and we've had some lovely messages, haven't we?
Yeah, lovely messages. Lovely, lovely. It's obviously a lot of it comes, we have some great support on the socials and stuff, but a lot of the messages come privately then and we're seeing people kind of reach out and resonate and share and be grateful, and we're grateful for them as well. It's lovely. And obviously we've had the Barry episode.
Yeah.
Which was
always good fun with Baz. He's just him and he's just, I think that's what I love about him, is just like, he's unapologetically himself. He just doesn't worry what anyone thinks, good or bad of him. He's just him, and you take him how he is. And I think obviously you see from the podcast, the way he speaks, he has his opinions. That's how he sees it. And then you resonate with it or you don't. And I think that's probably such a freedom. I think he has such a freedom. I think because he's such a positive man. I think he just has such a freedom to know that you're just you, and nothing affects that. You just stay in that zone all the time.
And superpower.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons we find such comfort in relationships is because after a certain period of time you spend with someone, you allow yourself to be totally yourself. And you realize everyone's nuts. Like you meet your partner and you're like, wow, to start with, they're so cool and they're so, they've got their shit together somewhat. And then the more time you spend together, you realize you're both absolutely nuts. So to be able to be around someone who is just like, this is me exactly as I am, and I'll be the same for you as I am for the king, as I am for a football manager, as I am for someone I've just met, like, I'm just going to be myself. And I just think it's really quite like, liberating to be around.
I think it gives you that permission in a sense that it's all right to be you.
Yes.
Isn't it? You see someone being themselves, and I think in your head it's like, oh, that is like a bit worrying, like to see them fully embracing themselves. But it's like, and then you think, oh, can I like be a little bit more like that? How can I implement a little bit more of myself? Because we get so ingrained and so taught to just be part of the system, be another cog in the wheel and stuff like that. And individuality, I feel, probably as you're growing up through schools and stuff, is kind of a little bit knocked out of you. So we just become part of the system, and that just becomes life, and we ultimately lose who we actually truly are. And I think when you meet people who fully embrace who they are and never change for anyone, I think that you kind of have that moment where you go, oh, that's what I was like let me try and find that again. And doing this, I think we're finding ourselves more and more, and hopefully you said we've had some beautiful messages, and hopefully now that's giving people that kind of that feeling that they can now start stepping into themselves a bit more and start kind of feeling their authentic true self and not worrying kind of so much what people think.
I think I've said off air to you that this process is allowing me to do that. I used to say, I've done some podcasts before, but I'd never listen to them back.
Yeah.
And I now listen back and the progression is I don't hate myself. That's progression.
Yeah, it is.
I don't hate what I'm saying. I don't hate who I am. I don't hate what I'm doing. I'm allowing myself to be myself.
Yeah.
And this process is allowing us to do that. So it's amazing that we're getting the feedback we're getting. So thank you for everyone so far. And I think that kind of brings us nicely into what we want to talk about today. And it's something we were having a conversation after recording a previous episode, and we realized that yourself, but I'm sure many others had experienced this from within football, is especially the higher up you get, the professional game teaches you to behave in a certain way in many ways, but not least of all when it comes to the media and being media trained and being expected to be something different to who you are. We love to see players like, sometimes I know Jack Grealish is great whenever he's on and does an interview. Sometimes he speaks really, really honestly.
Yeah.
And we love it and we love to hear it. And when you find those unique players who are willing to be quite honest and quite themselves within an interview process, it's really endearing. And we kind of, the nation kind of tends to fall in love with them. And Barry said it as well at some point, the media has a great way of building people up and then chopping them in half. Yeah. I think he the words he used. But throughout this process, you'd said it's almost the school of unlearning for you.
Yeah, 100%. All of it's been unlearning, but you say the media, so obviously the first podcast we did and probably the last couple we've been doing, I'm having to really unpick being so robotic with my answers, and I'm thinking about everything I'm saying, because it's like when you obviously you're playing and you do media stuff, you're scrutinized with everything you say. So I think when you look at it now and you watch players doing interviews, it is very robotic, and most of them say the same thing over and over again, because it's very hard to go away from a script. You don't know if you're going to get in trouble. You don't know how it's going to be misconstrued. Like, you can, people use it in different ways, so you become very guarded. And obviously for me doing the podcast, like you might see sometimes in the clip through the podcast, I sit there and I might be like not speaking, but in my head I'm thinking, what can I say? Like, is that going to be all right to say? Like, should I say that? And so it's now kind of unpicking it and kind of getting out of my head and more like into my heart and actually kind of expressing what I want to say and not being worried that what I'm going to say is going to come across wrong, or it eventually might get the club in trouble. It might get me in trouble in a sense for saying something. But as you said, like, people love to listen to the players who go against that grain and are authentically themselves and just say what they mean, because it's seen that uniqueness. I think footballers have become so, again, robotic, and rightly so.
Robotic is the word.
Yeah. I think it's just ingrained in you, like to speak this way. Don't say this. You can't say that. Like, obviously the governing bodies are very quick to jump on people for saying things that they don't agree with. So again, it's like, for me, it's been about unlearning, unpicking. And obviously for players who are in the game at the moment, it's trying to be themselves a bit more without getting in trouble.
Yeah. So I, being in a non-league background, I was never media trained. I think part of the reason a lot of people fall in love with non-league football is the realness that comes with it, which is why when we see the FA Cup games and you go down to the lower leagues, are playing against the more professional teams, like, there's this level of, there's this sense of identification between the people listening and the people playing.
Yeah.
So people love saying, we look at, like, say, Tamworth playing Spurs recently. People love saying, oh, the plumber of the centre-back who then takes the long throw, whatever. I can't remember exactly who it was, but they talk about those, like, the postman, these real people, and we love them. We don't know anything about them, but because there's a sense of realness to them, we automatically fall in love with these non-league teams and these real people.
Yeah.
And then we see these superstars, if you will, but they're still real human beings with real emotions and have an opinion on a situation, or in that given that moment, they've got a microphone flung in their face and they've just dealt with a very emotive situation and they're being asked questions, and it's like they're pressing a button to give an answer, like a pre-recorded answer.
I think that's very difficult, isn't it? Because you know, after games and obviously doing a lot of interviews and stuff, it is emotional, and you think...
I hate myself after a game.
But you think, like, you're suppressing those emotions in your interview. Sometimes you come off the pitch and you think, fuck, like, he did that and he did that and why didn't he do that, and like, it was a shit game and the team was crap, but you can't say those things, and then you have to suppress all that down, and you've got to go, yeah, we played well and we could have done better in this position and we should have done that, and yeah, on another day we might have won and we could have scored, and so you suppress all these emotions that you want to say, and then obviously I think that's detrimental, because you don't get to actually express what you want to say
or who you are, or to build a personal brand or some personal fans based upon who you are as a person, not just about how you've just played on a football pitch. And the reason I say I hate myself after a game is probably a little bit harsh, but my emotions are so high.
Yeah.
And actually, between kind of maybe the first minute I kick off and maybe an hour after the game, I adopt this role within myself that is kind of exclusively for football, which is very emotive. So to be put into a position with a microphone in front of my face after a game and being told to speak would be a very hard situation for me. And thankfully, I haven't had to do it that many times. You would have done.
Yeah.
So for the audience and for me, what would a media training session look like? What are you told?
Nothing. I never had a media training session in my life.
Okay.
So I literally, obviously I came through non-league. And then I kind of got thrust into it, really. You do little bits of press here and there within the non-league. Obviously, as you go up through the leagues, it gets bigger and bigger. But there's never a media class. Mm. It's just obviously something you kind of learn as you're going.
Others do
the
same.
Yeah. You kind of, you said you watch most interviews now. They're very, very similar. They kind of all say the same things. It's just all the same phrases.
Yeah.
And I think it's just something you learn within the game to, again, it can have an effect on the team. Something you said, obviously you can get fined for certain same things. You don't want to rub people up the wrong way. So there's a lot that you have to consider while you're doing the interviews and say how it's going to be construed by others. So there isn't any training for it. I don't know so much now. Maybe in the academies, they might get taught some stuff to how to deal with it. And I don't know whether they allow them to be more individualistic or is still very much just say this, just keep it very simple. Don't open yourself up to any kind of attacks from anyone. Mm-hmm. But for me, I was just literally, I just had to learn as I went.
Yeah.
And I found it quite difficult because I was quite shy. So it was like, I still put myself forward, but I was still quite shy within it, and I never wanted to make a mistake. Like, I was that people pleaser. I always wanted to say the right things. I wanted it to sound good for the fans, and but in inside, sometimes there's times that I wanted to say stuff that I was pissed off, or the team should have done this, or we were awful, or this was crap, or like, and you couldn't, because it was, for me anyway, it was just like, just be the good boy, toe the line, do the right thing. Let's move on to the next game. And instead, ultimately, you're just shoving these things down bit by bit.
Yeah, further and further.
And it's just a little bit, a step away from your authentic self, in a sense. You kind of, that little bit of not saying what you want to say. Mm. Then you go back and then you think, oh, I wish I said that, or that should have been said.
So essentially, I'm just listening. But although you were self-taught, you knew what you knew not to put your foot in it.
Yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah.
So at the height of your emotion, kind of post game, you were expected to show none, let nothing go, and fit the mold to make sure everyone else was happy.
Yeah.
In the moment where you were supposedly going to be the most personable, when you've watched 22 other men, maybe 26 with substitutions, different things, and you've all been watched. That one moment when the camera's on you, in that moment to be totally yourself, you just choose to, you're made to be a robot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really strange, isn't it?
Yeah. But I think that's why it's becoming such a big divide between fans and players and stuff like that. But I don't think fans really get to know players. And you say, like, we love to see the Jack Grealishes of the world, the Cole Palmers, like, just talk their mind and just, they not care in a world and just say how they feel and stuff like that. And I think fans would resonate more with players, and I think there'd be more of a cohesion, because I think there's quite a divide between the fans and players at the moment, and they want to know. And I think back in the day, you'd be in the pub with the fans, and you'd be eating and you're drinking and laughing and like talking about the game and stuff like that. And obviously now, it's due to kind of social media and then the way the press are, like players don't really want to be around fans too much, because you just don't know whether you're going to get caught in a conversation. The Ivan Toney situation, talking about someone taking the camera shot, put on, because people want to be seen to getting the exclusive, and it goes up on social media, it's misconstrued, you don't know what it is, what's said, what context it's said in. So then it's like, as a player, you can just go, I'm not going to say anything, I'm just going to zip it up and just like, I'm going to do this, say this, not to talk to anyone, give anything away, because as soon as you do, you open yourself up a bit.
It's so interesting, because it's not just the voice on, like you said, on interviews now, it's that voice on social media.
Yeah.
And I was listening to TalkSport yesterday morning, and rightly or wrongly, there was a conversation with Ali McCoist, Jeff Stelling, and I think Siobhan Ahern is the lady talking up. And Jadon Sancho had essentially commented on Marcus Rashford's photo.
Yeah.
And he had wrote, Rashford was just some playing photos of him playing for Villa the other night.
Yeah.
And Sancho had replied with freedom and the hands up emoji.
Yeah.
And I kind of got what he was saying.
Yeah.
I kind of understood that as a player, we want to find that freedom. We want to just find that enjoyment again. We want to find that childlike kind of ability just to go and play and have fun. So I knew what he meant. And I don't think he was meaning to, he might have known what he was doing, but I don't think he was meaning to kind of put the knife in at Manchester United. Mm. But all the only way they could see it, the only way TalkSport were talking about it, was in a manner where they were like, how dare he? He was on so much money. He should have just kind of shut up and got on with it. Mm. He wasn't locked up.
Yeah.
How kind of tone deaf is he when he wasn't in prison at Manchester United? The reality is none of us know how anyone's feeling.
Yeah.
And just because someone is paid a certain amount of money to do a job, that is what they're paid. They're contractually obligated to do that. They are offered that as a contract. And of course they're going to say yes to it. Doesn't mean they're not allowed to feel free.
No.
It doesn't mean they're not allowed to feel trapped in that environment and not able to express who they are as a player and as an individual. So he writes one comment on social media and all of a sudden he's the bad guy again.
They're trying to, again, it's that silencing of the individuality, isn't it? And we don't know what goes on in the background at Man United. Like, obviously, there's lots of stuff within football clubs. You get together as players, you become very close. Mm. You create different groups within there and you can see what goes on, whether players are being treated well, not being treated well. Like sometimes you just want the best. You might be your mate. You want your best for your mate, and you do write stuff on social media, like to highlight and to show that in a way you care. Sometimes it can be a little kind of kick in the teeth for against the other team of how you've been treated.
Yeah,
but it shouldn't be. I don't think there should be like hammered about it too much. It's like he's obviously felt for his mate, and he's put a bit on social media. He's not gone out there and he's not publicly battered anyone and he's not pulled someone, said something bad about anyone. He's put a nice thing about someone that he obviously respects and has seen his plight. So I don't think that's a thing where he should be had a go at.
But he is and he will be. And he'd left it there, which I'm pleased about. But we have this expectation of young men in their 20s, because they have a certain amount of money in their bank, that should make them grow up faster or that should make them behave differently or feel differently because they have a certain amount of money. And yes, they are privileged to earn an amount of money. Lots of them do lots of things with that money that we don't know about, which are helping others as well. We just assume sort of Marcus Rashford was pictured in New York wearing that a big fluffy Louis Vuitton jacket and a nice, I think it was a Hermes bag. And people were criticizing this man for not being at training and not showcasing his wealth. But we're very quick to forget he also fed hundreds, if not thousands, of children very recently. Mm. We forget how much he's still doing for a local community. And that will get swept under the carpet because it's much sooner just cut someone down. Like he says, build them up and chop them in half. And the culture is...
I think we say we like to break people down. We like to build them up and break them down. And I think... It's just very frustrating because we all want to succeed. We all want to each other to succeed. And I think it's should always be looking to build each other up. Yes, mistakes are going to be made. And with social media, the newspapers, things get worldwide. Mm. But I think we should always be looking to build each other up, looking to help push ourselves on, because I just think like it just becomes like, it's just a better place. Like, I want you to succeed. You want me to succeed. Like, that's how it should be.
I can almost guarantee you some of your best relationships in football would have been with strike partners who were playing in the same position with you and potentially taking that same position from you. And I can guarantee you that the environments you worked best in was when you were supporting that other man scoring a goal when he was playing in your place and vice versa.
Thing is,
healthy competition.
It's definitely like strikers, but also like just throughout the whole team. Like, if you were centre half, I'd be cheering. Like if you kept a clean sheet, like I'd be absolutely buzzing. Like I'm high fiving you. Like you're like you've done your job. You're a defender. That's what you're a winger. You set up two goals. Like I'd be like delighted for you because it's like it doesn't kind of matter what position we're on the pitch. Like in that moment in time, as you're playing football, we're a team. Like I want you to succeed. I want you to be the best you possibly can be. And obviously, in that you obviously you don't want the opposition to be as good as they possibly can be. But then, like. Again, it's like it's just that building each other up. Now coming out of football, it's like you can spread that further. Now you can want to build everyone up. You want to help everyone to rise. But I just think we sometimes, whether it's I don't know, it's the country or the media or what, we were very, as you said, we're very good at building people up and getting to the top of the tree. And then it's like you've had your 5 minutes of fame. Let's just chop them down. And
I think I saw a quote recently, and I think this is just really apt right now. Is that dimming someone else's light won't help yours shine brighter.
Mm.
And it's very similar to kind of no one else's success has that much of an impact on yours. Like, and they're both true in their own light. Like, by wanting something worse for someone else isn't going to make your life better. But we, there's a culture of it.
Yeah.
There's a culture of we would much sooner do that. But I want people around me to win.
Yeah.
Like, I want everyone around me to win.
Yeah. I think we
but football's, football's a hard one, isn't it? Because then I've had some games where I'm having a battle with a centre half and he might win one, I win one, and there's some friend where I say, fair play, mate, good, this yeah. and that, and he'll give it back. And I think I play at my best when I'm like that, because I'm focusing on kind of my role in this and being better than the next individual. Mm. When I start having a row with another player,
which
saying,
I've
you're
seen.
Shit,
I've
yeah, you've seen me, yeah. you're shit, yeah. fuck, and just and trying to, my game's gone.
Yeah,
my focus is on just trying to belittle them rather than improve myself.
Yeah,
and it takes me 10, 15, 20 minutes to realize that, and I'm like, oh, I've just been calling him a twat for the last 20 minutes. I haven't touched the football.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm luckily in a stage now of my life and my career, I can, the value of hindsight and the value of just going, okay, I'll stop and
yeah.
rectify that and move forward. But these are just small scale things. And I think there can be a shift in our culture whereby we're not looking at any given opportunity to bring someone else down, to make ourselves feel better.
Mm.
As well as that, there is something I wanted to lead into for you that we talked about is highly emotive situations and then also being, have a camera flung in front of you or an expectation to be in front of the media and behave in a certain way when there's lots of things going on outside of football. Mm. Now, I know there's a few experiences in your life where you were expected to behave a certain way when there was lots of things going on. Yeah. Not least of all, you mentioned in the very first episode about kind of what you were going through. And there's fans who are writing in and saying, wow, I thought you were thriving and you were in that position. But tell us about times where you've been expected to be in the media and you've had, and your life's been perhaps behind the scenes has been more difficult and you've got to put on a certain mask or a certain place or a certain face for that situation.
Yeah. And I have a really good story, but like, so my time at Brighton was amazing. And at the time, obviously I played for Scotland and I think there's some nice places out and about. So me and Amber would go out. We had Isla, my little girl. So we went to a place called Tunbridge Wells. Amber was pregnant. We were expecting our second child. So everything's great. So we've gone to Tunbridge Wells. And then it was just a strange day. We went to Tunbridge Wells and we were just going in the shopping centre. And Amber was having like issues with contractions. He was like, I think I'm having contractions. And we're only like, I can't remember how many weeks we were into the pregnancy now, not too far. So I just said, like, I just sit down, just have a relax. We go and get some tablets out of the chemist just to make sure that she might be a headache. Like, yeah, she's pregnant and she might have eaten something that's just disagreed with her. So we have some, get some tablets. She goes and sits on the bench, just relaxing and stuff like that, hoping this kind of, it would pass. And she was just like, they're getting worse. I think the contractions, they're getting heavier and heavier. And we're in a shopping centre on a Sunday, so it's really busy. I've got Isla. We're just kind of like trying to work out what's going on. What's the best thing to do? Do we stay? Do we go? And obviously the pain's getting stronger and it's getting worse. And I think in that realization, we realized that Amber was having a miscarriage in the shopping center. So it was just like, yeah, it was just obviously never been through that before. So it's just like, what do you do? How do you deal with it? And Amber's a strong woman, like mentally she's so strong, and she was just kind of like, just gonna have to deal with it. I'm gonna have to have it here on the bench in the shopping center. So she gave me a few quid, and there was a little Peppa Pig machine down the road, or down the hallway. So I went down there with Isla and put her on a Peppa Pig machine, and Amber was just in agony on the bench.
My God.
Like, obviously, say people walking around, I think a lady stopped to just find out if Amber was all right. And I think Amber had to explain. I think the lady was, she might have been deaf. So Amber explained to her in sign language that she was just having a kind of a miscarriage and that in the thing. We couldn't get anywhere because obviously Amber was in so much pain. We couldn't move. So she just had to ride it out and go through it. And I'd say I was down with Isla and I was just screaming at mummy, like saying, look at me, mummy, I'm on the Peppa Pig machine. And it's kind of just waving, waving, hunched over on the bench. And I'm thinking, I'm just trying to work out, like what can I do to help? I don't know. There's nothing I can do really. Like I'm kind of helpless. I can see Amber just up the top, like dealing with what she's dealing with. Like, and I've got to deal with Isla because I don't want her to be up there. And they say she's a remarkable woman. She just kept going and she got through it. And yeah, she basically had the baby, the whatever it was. It must have been 12 weeks maybe. And she had it there and then in the shopping centre. So that was like crazy. And obviously you just had to take a moment with everything that happened. And I think we kind of packed our stuff up and got back into the car. And then we're driving back. And then I realised that I had a phone interview with, I think it was Talk Sport. within the next 15 minutes. To talk about like the England Scotland game, like, I wasn't playing. I think I was coming off of rupturing my Achilles, so I had to talk about. I had to kind of change from going from like dealing with Amber having this miscarriage in the shopping centre to then speaking about football and putting a happy persona on and talking about everything that's going on with England Scotland and why I'm not playing and the injury and all of that kind of stuff. So it was literally I had to kind of flip between two different emotions within the space of probably half an hour. So it was just, yeah, it was just like, just really chaotic. So it was kind of like, I think I got so used to though being, pushing my emotions down and being robotic with the media. So I think like I could flip, it wasn't ideal, but I could flip from going from a situation that was like harrowing and horrific,
yeah,
to then switching it and being the robotic persona I needed because I knew the structured answers that I'd probably need to say. So yeah, it was a tough period. And then we had a game probably not long after that, I think, away to Burton in the it was like called the Carabao Cup. I don't know what cup it is now.
No, yeah, but.
But I was having a breakdown on the pitch as we were playing, like from everything that had gone on, because obviously I'd put all this inside and I'd not told anyone and I just kind of just got on with it. It was just like, it's another day in football, it's another day in life. Like just stick all them emotions down, just get on with it. Like got to get myself ready for the game. Like I'm trying to get a contract at Brighton. I'm trying to do well. I want the fans to like me. So we were playing and like, I was breaking down as the game was going on. When I had a bad touch, it just made the emotions worse. And then I had another bad touch and then I did something else wrong. And then it was just snowballing and I could feel it. I couldn't get away from it. And it was just like, I was having a breakdown. I scored and I was just numb. I was so numb and so, I wasn't even angry. I was just like, I didn't know how to feel. I didn't know like what was going on. Like I was just, yeah, I couldn't deal with, I think, everything that had kind of happened. And then I got into the dressing room after the game and just burst out into tears. I could not stop crying. Just like literally was just bawling my eyes out. And I think that was just like everything that I'd pressed down and fit between this like situations and not really processing it. I think everything just got on top of me and yeah, I just had a massive breakdown. And then I think after that, I was all right after that. I think because I got it out, like it's probably not where I wanted to get it out, but it had to come out.
Yeah.
No one knows. Until today, no one knows that story. No one knows what we went through for that period of time. And obviously my story is mine and I bet there's many players out there have probably got very similar stories and different contexts of what they've had to deal with to then flip to straight into football mode.
I knew a little bit of that, but I could see how hard it was for you to even articulate that again. Yeah. I could see how hard it was.
The things I didn't go through it physically. Like I said, I was just there. And I think, again, it was just that helplessness, being so helpless to know what Amber was going through and not actually being able to do anything and not even to be kind of like in the privacy of a clinic or going to a hospital. It was like we were in the middle of a shopping centre, like we have nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, having to kind of mask what the situation was and what was going on. And obviously having Isla there to try and keep her away from it all. It was just, and as I said, because football moves so fast, life moves so fast, you don't process it. So I just took it in. It's just like, that's just part and parcel of life. Got to deal with it. Right, okay, I'm on to the next thing. What's that? I've got an interview on the phone. Okay, right, I'm going to do that. Oh, now we've got a game, still not processed it. And then obviously the emotions of the game, how I expect it to be going, it's not going. And then obviously to add on top of that, the football, the miscarriage side. And then it just overloaded me.
It's really hard to hear my friend talk about that. Very brave of you. And listen, we're a podcast looking at men's mental health predominantly, with not just exclusive to sport. And we are going to have more conversations outside of football. But today we're talking about the impact, what the game had on that situation. And we're not trying to claim in any way. We understand what it feels like to have a miscarriage from a female perspective. Yeah, yeah. We're just looking at it from your perspective here. It blows my fucking mind to think about you having to go onto a national radio station and talk about England, Scotland, which would be the biggest thing in everyone's biggest game on everyone's mind for that period of time. I'm struggling with my own words. Having heard that story, mate. I really am. To go on and to the radio, national radio after that, deliver anything is mind-blowing. Mm. But you're not going to be the only person that's ever done that. Like, there's going to be lots of times we hear people and we just have this assumption that they've just like finished a nice training session or had a nice massage or in their big house or on holiday somewhere. They're fucking not. They're real human beings dealing with real issues. And we have an expectation on these young men to go and then deal with these situations in a manner that we see fit.
Yeah. But you don't have that time. You don't I think it's, you just don't have that time to process it with football. It's so fast moving. It's like you miscarriage on Monday and the phone call, then and on the Wednesday you're training or whatever it is. Then your game's on a Saturday. There isn't really time to stop and think like to process emotions. It's literally like, it's just go, 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 go. And then by the time you really want to think, like you get time to think about it, it's like it's gone. It's been pushed down. It was just part and parcel of life. We move on. We're on to the next thing.
You're still talking as if there's a player in you there. You're still talking about that you have to move on, but you don't, because we're sat here now having this conversation and we're going to hopefully change things for people moving forward, not just in light of this situation, but in plenty of other situations like it, because pain is unique and every person's version of pain is a unique experience of it, even if it's the exact same thing. So you may have been through a miscarriage, you may have been through a divorce, you may have lost a family member. Everyone's version of that is a unique version of that. So we're not trying to say here that we know exactly how it feels in this situation, but what we are trying to say is men in football are going through situations like this, and then we are expecting them to perform and behave and continue their life as if it hasn't happened.
Yeah,
and maybe that isn't directly coming from the manager down, or the chairman down, or from the club down, or whatever else. That's just the culture.
Yeah, it's just ingrained in you, isn't it? From a kid, you're ingrained to just get on and just like just say, just shove it under the carpet, keep moving forward. Like,
well,
no, and I think it's obviously, I feel stronger and stronger now. Obviously, the more we've done this and let's say the length of time we've known each other, I feel like I've grown and those things now can come out of me. And I wish maybe at the time I felt more comfortable to speak about it and actually take the time to look at it and really get it out there. But I just think I just felt like maybe it's that weakness. So you don't want to show weakness. Like you just want to be the good boy who gets on and like you kind of nothing affects you right this into the next game. Because again, it's like I feel sometimes these little things can be judged. They get judged differently. Like if you're again, it was quite a big thing, and maybe I should have said more about it. But obviously, you just worry that it's going to affect your place in the team.
Yeah.
And then and with football, you know, if you come out of the team, sometimes you might get back in the team, and it's like you just want to kind of. You don't want to lose that place and things like that, like real life situations sometimes don't take as big a relevance as they should do because it's like, I've got to put that aside now because I've got to stay in the team and I've got to perform and I've got to make sure I do the right things, which probably should be the other way around. The real life stuff should take prevalence over the football. But I think it's just driven into you, isn't it? Just don't worry what's going on. Just keep doing your football. Keep doing this. And yeah, the real shit is seen to be not as important.
I was just thinking about something. It might have been last season. I think it was Pep Guardiola wasn't at a Manchester City game. It was whatever year they won the four in a row. When they won the fourth title, I think it might have been last year. Mm. Anyway, he wasn't at a game because he had a back operation and he was dealing with some severe pain in his back and finally had to get it dealt with, which meant he was going to miss a game during the season and one of his staff took over. And I remember thinking, oh, this is weird. Like, why is he not at the game?
Yeah.
In any other line of work, someone is allowed to have a day off.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, whether that be for a holiday, I get the football's different and you won't necessarily have holidays during the season. I'm not suggesting I'm petitioning for that, but we do need to normalise the idea of players having the ability or at least knowing they have the ability to that if something's going on in their personal life, which could affect the football or could affect, and I'm sure there is. I'm sure no one's blocking this. It's a culture, isn't it? Mm. More than anything else, is that it's an expectation. It's a feeling amongst players and amongst people involved in football that we have to behave this way, but we shouldn't.
No.
We shouldn't, if there is a huge life event going on. How often do you hear about players and it almost being championing? His baby was born this morning and he scored this afternoon and he's doing that. That's great.
Yeah.
I think he's probably better off just being at home with a kid.
Yeah. Like, yeah, no, I think you're right. I have a good story. Obviously, we never spoke about it when with Baz, but me and Barry delivered my first child together without a midwife.
Okay.
So that was just like an amazing story. And
oh my God, I'm sure it was.
That's funny because that was an England-Scotland game as well.
Wow.
But Amber had to ring the management staff to say that I was going to have a day off because I had to go and lay down because I was so tired after the to the event. But I think that I would have probably.
So you made Amber do it? She'd just given birth.
Yeah. It was a chore. The thing is, there was no midwife. There was nothing. It was our first child.
Yeah.
Like it was me and Barry and Amber's mum there. So it was like, yeah, it was. And obviously she was in the zone. Like I said, extraordinary woman, no pain relief, nothing. Just got the baby out, got Isla out. And yeah, for me, it was just an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
So she had to ring the management staff and say, he's not coming in. Like he's gone to bed.
So, that is.
I did have a day off.
Well, that's one sure one fire way of you avoiding the situation, avoiding having to deal with it yourself, is getting your wife, who's just given birth, to ring up for you because they can't argue with her.
No, they certainly
can't argue with her. Wow. So, this is the thing. Like, we're not going to change this culture overnight.
No,
and it's not about you and I changing that culture, but it's about trying to affect positive change in the environments we're working in, and hopefully that'll have a larger ripple effect.
Empowering them to feel confident. Like, and we said, like the authenticity, the like Barry standing in his own power, knowing who he is. Giving those hopefully we're giving people that opportunity to find that authenticity, to find standing in your power, to find being that one who says, no, this isn't right. And I'll stand here and say it's not right. And whatever the consequences are of that, I'm willing to take that because I know this is not right. And that's what I think the hope is giving players and obviously the wider audience, like that ability to be able to do that?
I think we have an inherent ability to know wrong from right.
Mm.
Most of us, unless we are dealing with some sort of deeper psychological issues, like we know if it feels right and we know if it feels wrong.
Mm.
And that those lines get really blurred sometimes, don't they?
Mm.
They get really blurred as to this might not feel right, but I need to do it because of X or because of Y. And allowing people that inherent ability to say, I don't feel right about this, or this feels wrong. Mm. I don't want to be a part of it. Because footballers get themselves into a lot of situations that a lot of, sometimes even as a wider group, I'm not sure they all agree with what's going on or what's happening, but you go, I know I did. You just go with it because it's, everyone else is doing it.
Yeah.
The wider, or it might be seen as cool to do it, but.
Did you, when you, obviously we were playing and stuff, did you ever see anyone go against the grain? And if you did, what did you think then? And obviously to how you think now?
It's a really good question. Really good question. I'd like to say me at one point, and I only felt capable of doing it once I was the best player in the team. Mm. I was scoring every week, so I thought you can't argue with me too much now. And I mean, I wasn't completely authentic, but I started talking about my emotions and talking about how I felt with regards to, it was more kind of my own mental health at the time, and admitting I had problems and sharing that with the boys and with the team. Because for so long I'd championed the idea of going out and behaving in a certain way and womanizing and drinking drugs, all that sort of stuff. And, fighting and just the ego driven behavior that goes beyond boys will be boys type stuff.
Yeah.
And I think probably later in my 20s, I started saying, actually, if I heard something happen in the changing rooms, a certain joke or said in a certain way, and I didn't think it was right, I'd stand up to it.
Mm.
Or if someone said something, I'd pull them up if it wasn't what I thought was right. And I think at first I was met with, teasing, and kind of like banter from the boys. Like years on, those same people now pay me for my time.
Yeah, I wanted to know that because I wanted to know how you were perceived after you stepped up and basically said this is not right. This is
by the younger players in particular. They really warmed to it. I started getting a lot more younger players approaching me and speaking to me about how they were feeling and their role on the team and having a level of trust in me that I'd not seen before in the younger lads. And I'm talking like lads who are just coming through and they saw me as a safe person to share their emotions with, which I thought was amazing. The more senior boys, it took a lot longer to... some never have.
Yeah.
Some still think I'm stupid for the way I am. Some will still watch me on this podcast and think I'm stupid for doing it.
So do you think we're like in a pivotal moment, really? Because obviously, I feel like my generation was still in the generation of like pull your bootstraps up, like deal with it, stick it down, like get on with it. And now I've been on the other side and I've seen these young lads, they're a bit more vulnerable and they need a bit more building up and stuff. So do you think we're on that pivotal moment where it's a great time to now say that era is probably changing and the more, more loving needs to be given to these players? Do you think we're on that era now where we can start implementing more of this into football clubs?
Yeah, I think.
And it's more accepted, it will become more accepted now because it's kind of their era, the younger lads' era.
If
that makes sense.
It's going to take someone to be willing to stand up in the environment they're in and to be different as well. And I've got a friend of mine who will come on this pod, a guy called John Bitting, who's over at MK Dons, working with the academy over at MK Dons. And I know he is implementing a culture change whereby primarily he's looking after the young man first and the player second.
Mm.
I've watched him do that. Mm. I've been a part of that. I've been in and done talks at the football club about my experience and what's going on. And even simple things like that, he's implementing with young men to allow them to be proud of who they are, good or bad. Mm. And if it is, they are having issues and different things, to be able to have the right avenues to fix that and to be liberated in the sense of allowing authenticity to shine through.
Mm.
But it's going to come from the top down.
Mm. Yeah,
and it has to start with the young players. Some of the more senior boys now are football's taught them, and it's like you've learned yourself. It's really hard to unlearn those behaviours. Mm-hmm. So we are going to have to. It's going to have to come from the top down. It's going to have to start from the youth up a little bit as well, and hopefully more men in our situation perhaps have in yours had a career, or I've been involved in football in different ways and standing up and having a voice, which allows them to do the same, which is the whole essence of what we're trying to do here. That's a really interesting question.
Mm.
I'd like to ask you the same thing. Who have you played with where you've just seen them go and be exactly who they are and all that they do? And has that rubbed off on you? Or did it perhaps at times, did it actually frighten you? Were you thinking, who the fuck's this guy who can be all these things?
Yeah, I think when you see, say, when you're in that team dynamic, it becomes that you don't want to be different from the team. So when you see someone stepping out and being a bit different, it's very hard not to get sucked into that. Ah, look at him, like, what's he doing? Because everyone else is doing it. And I don't want to be that one that says, oh, no, that's quite cool, because then I might get put into that bracket of not being liked and being kind of highlighted. So it's... It has been hard. I'm trying to think who I've gone through my career, really. Obviously, like, I had like George Boyd, like unapologetically him, used to wear some Rascal gear and stuff like that. But like, just embraced himself. Like, he didn't worry what people were saying and that. He'd get laughed at and stuff. But he was always himself. Aaron McLean, again, like, was always himself. And these people, like, they rubbed off. They made me want to be more like myself.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest ones for me is probably Akin Fenwa. It's probably the biggest one that I've seen. Who's just him, like 24. He's very much. He reminds me very much of Barry. He is him. That is it. Like, no matter what. And I've always admired that, and him, and I always admire that in people, I think, who are willing to kind of just be themselves and stand up, especially in the football industry. It is very much a group think. You like, if someone's different, it's like, why are they different? What are they doing? I found that a little bit when I started doing like my holistic modalities, like doing the meditation, doing kind of like talking about crystals and light therapy and all these different things. You get looked at like a bit weird, but it's being comfortable and standing in your power, standing in who you are, standing in what you believe in, not what everyone else thinks you should be doing.
Mm.
So it's been really interesting, like, that whole journey of kind of being that individual. It's always been fit in the group, being a team, be liked, do all the things you should be doing so that you fit in. And then obviously getting older and that, and coming into this, it's like really trying to find me now.
Yeah.
Like, me trying to find, like, what, like I said, right, I think the first episode, it's like, who am I? Like, what do I like? Like, who was I when I was a kid? What did I like when I was a kid?
Because
you get lost in between that kind of that kid bit to then kind of into teens, and then obviously getting into the football world, you lose who you were, like what your interests were, and like your happy-go-lucky self, because you want to fit in so much and you want to be a good boy and you want to make the to the top. So you're going to do the things that you think you should be doing, like everyone else is doing. And then you kind of, as I said, the Wickham situation is like, it was more embrace of being who you are. And that was so freeing for, I think, everyone. That's why the team was so successful.
Mm.
So it's. I think I'm hoping as the more we do this, as the months and years go by, individuality, authenticity is championed more in team sports. Because I think that makes you a stronger team rather than a weaker team. Mm. And I'd love to see whether this would ever happen, but the media getting on that and championing individuality and championing these people and not breaking them down, the Marcus Rashfords.
They do in other environments, though.
Yeah.
They do in other environments. It's just football, really, where we... sorry, the music industry will be very bad. Celebrities are bad, but like footballers are celebrities. But in... we are, as a world, we are allowing other people to go and be themselves in other ways and accepting of it and championing it, whether you like that or you're not, or you don't, that's happening in this world. Like you are, in terms of gender these days, no more and more of a kind of a poignant topic whereby you can kind of pick whether you want to be male or female or trans or anything. And we're socially acceptable of that. Saying, okay, that's your choice. And you do your thing. Mm. Footballers are not.
No, they held to a standard, didn't they?
Yeah, they're not.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because I love what you're doing with all your red light therapy and all your kind of holistic work that you have. But when you first started that, people would have laughed. I know they would have done.
Mm.
And luckily now those same people are now paying you to go into the clubs and do different things like that. Mm. And it does go full circle. I think we just have to say to people, like, if we have any advice at this point here, is embrace that individuality, embrace that uniqueness, embrace who you are. No one's going to be better at you than you. And it feels like, trust it. Like when we started this, we thought, what the fuck are we doing? And we're only a few in but it feels right, doesn't it?
No, it does.
It feels right. And it's been incredibly positive so far. But if someone wants to challenge us, I think we just invite them to come on and talk.
Yeah. But I think that you say that individuality, I think, like, you find other people who resonate with you. Like, we found each other. We were on our path of individuality, finding each other. We've had wonderful messages from people who have felt the same way in sort of aspects of what we spoke. I just think, like, it's having that bravery to stand in your power and say, this is who I am.
Yeah.
Knowing that you will find your people, your tribe, however you want to see it, you will find them. They will find you. It's the way. You don't stand up and go, this is me individually, and then I'm the only person like that. It's not. You people resonate to you. Like when when you become your authentic self, the real people that are meant to be around you will be around you. When you're not your authentic self, you're surrounded by people who aren't their authentic self, so you don't know what you're getting from them.
Mm.
And I think you'll feel that. I know that when you're around people that resonate their authentic self, just like you do now, you get that warmth, you get that understanding.
It's like amazing to be around.
Of who you are. You sit there in your power of knowing who you are. Obviously, you're still learning. It's been a journey to get to that position where you are now, but you're still learning and you're attracting the people in, the situations in that you want to be in. And I think people have to realize that it's like, as soon as you start deciding you want better, as soon as you just start deciding that this is me and this is how I want to be, as I said, at first it might look dark and it might look like, what am I doing?
Mm.
But eventually that darkness clears and the path comes brighter and the people that are meant to be with you are with you and you start feeling more comfortable in yourself because you are you at the end of the day.
I think that you've hit the nail on the head there, and it's incredibly liberating to be around other people who are willing to be like that, and never underestimate the power of, by you being yourself and embracing that, and how it makes others feel and liberates them to do the same. Like, we were never supposed to shrink to make other people feel better.
Mm.
Shine and they'll shine too.
It doesn't mean that you can't have disagreements with those other individuals.
No, it's wonderful.
But you have good disagreements.
Conversations. Like,
and you're willing to accept both sides and listen and not be scared of another kind of viewpoint.
You learn.
Yeah.
That's where it happens, where the magic happens.
Yeah.
I think there's something I wanted to do. We've been doing we did it with Barry, and we're planning on doing it with guests moving forward, of which we've got some great people lined up, where we, and I'm going to give you a bit of time to think about it.
Yeah.
Where we give the best piece that we're going to ask guests to give the best piece of advice they were ever given. And we're going to tell the next guest that comes on what that was and ask them to share theirs. But I think we need to do that.
Mm.
So have a moment to think what your best piece of advice was. Cause I know mine sticks out really clearly in my head. So I'm going to start. And I know you're more of a, I'm more of a blurt it out type of guy.
Yeah.
And you're more pensive in your thoughts. So I'm going to give mine, and you don't really have to listen. You've already heard this. So you have a think about yours. So the best piece of advice I was ever given was I was talking to my therapist about the breakdown of my marriage. And I was saying how wonderful my ex-wife was. She's a great human being, of course still is. And I explained all the reasons why she wasn't going to be able to live without me. And I thought I was being kind. So I was saying, but what were her family going to do? What's she going to do? How's she going to feel if I'm not around? And what about the cats? And we didn't have kids at the time, but I gave all this list of reasons of why, like, it was going to be really hard for Kelly, my ex-wife, to cope without me. And my therapist very kindly and very gently said to me, and it's what I needed to hear at the time, what the fuck makes you so special? And it was this really grounding experience that I am special and unique in my own way. But in that moment there, I was almost dulling hers by thinking she couldn't live without me and thinking that she wasn't going to be able, she didn't have the strength to continue without me.
Yeah.
And she very much has and is flourishing in her own way now. But I had thought in that situation, I was the good in all of it, and I wasn't. And she said to me, what the fuck makes you so special? And I've really kept that with me to this day.
Mm.
And I know it can sound a little bit contradictory because we're trying to uplift everyone else, but I think it's a reminder that the good happens in spite of me, not because of me. And it made me look into a lot of things. And it made me look into kind of, I have a faith, but that faith is in the universe, is in the path that I'm walking is there for me. And that was part of the path I should be walking. But it was that realization that things are going to unfold and people are going to be beautiful and unique in spite of me, not because of me. And it reminded me of another situation where I was talking to a player, and I may have already told this story, but it's relevant about, he played for Egypt when Mo Salah scored that penalty to take him to the World Cup final. And Mo Salah was so calm before the game, yerba tea, towel on his head. And this player says to him, he says, how are you so calm? Like, what's going on? Like, you've got 100,000 people in this stadium all looking at you. Like, what's going on? He scores the penalty in the last minute of that game anyway, by the way. But he says, This happens in spite of me, not because of me. And it's that reconnecting with the universe and reconnecting with a faith or something, reconnecting with a higher power of some feeling. It doesn't have to, that could be a God for you, or that could just be the universe in my sense. It could be a planet, just whatever you believe in. But it's that thing that there's things bigger than you.
Mm.
And all we can really, really do is try and be the kindest, the most hardest working, most compassionate version of ourselves, and then allow things to unfold more naturally. And that's for good situations and for bad situations. And I realized that in just one question, which is the, what the fuck makes you special, which is why it was such a poignant piece of advice for me in my life. And it stuck with me in a really positive way.
That's good.
You still thinking?
I'm still thinking. I know what it is. I just don't know. And it's so like corny. And it was in a child's film. It was on Kung Fu Panda.
But they're the best.
And I can't,
kids films, kids books are where a lot of great knowledge comes from.
I want to say it right, because I don't want to do it a disservice. And it's in my head. I can't think exactly how it goes.
Right. We will wait until the next time you and I are doing a solo episode, because we've got some really good guests coming up over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
So you'll see them before, you'll see their advice before you see this.
Yeah.
But Craig will come back with his Kung Fu Panda advice.
I will rehearse it so I can actually remember it in order, because it is, and I don't want to give, I don't.
People Save
probably,
it.
Yeah, people already know words, and I don't want to say what it represents, because then
right.
I want to do it justice, because I feel it's so poignant for me at this moment in time.
So if you are coming back for anything, it's for Kung Fu Panda based advice.
There's nothing about the meatballs or the spaghetti.
and some good guests and some more conversation.
Perfect, mate.
Until then, thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.